All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Rinkwide Vancouver. Clinching that playoff spot, proving to be a little more difficult than the Vancouver Canucks probably anticipated. They missed their second straight chance to get that X beside their name in the standings as they lose the special teams battle and they lose the hockey game, falling 3-1 to the visiting Dallas Stars. This is Rinkwide Vancouver coming to you from our studio in the Wall Center Hotel, and center really says it all. Wall Center truly in the middle of the downtown core, close to just about everything from restaurants to shopping to sports venues to English Bay and Stanley Park. And whether you have people in from out of town or you're considering a staycation for yourself, make sure it includes the Wall Center Hotel. Jeff Patterson joined on this episode by Harmon Dial of The Athletic and Canucks Conversation. Harm, the Dallas Stars came to town as the top team in the Western Conference. They add two more points to their total. They lock down a playoff spot. They pass the 100-point mark on the season. And the Vancouver Canucks are wondering where it went wrong because, again, like the Los Angeles game the other night, the Canucks didn't play poorly, particularly 5-on-5. But there are special teams within hockey games, and the Stars crushed the Canucks in that area.
Yeah, and it feels like a bit of a trend now where these games against Dallas, the most recent one against LA, even the three against Colorado, each one of them, you don't look at the Canucks and say, oh, they've been totally outclassed. They put in a poor effort by any means. It's been close, but somehow not close enough. And you're right, on this occasion, it was special teams because they won the matchup 1-0 at even strength. And for the most part, there wasn't a lot of offense, especially for each team's top six on either side. It was tight defensively. And I know it's such a cliche, but these games have all felt like playoff style contests. And when you're in these low scoring affairs, number one, discipline is going to be really important. And the Canucks gave Dallas five power play opportunities, which is too many in the first place. And then from there, I look more at the power play rather than the PK in terms of where that letdown was, because that Stars unit is lethal. It's been elite really since, I think, the Dallas power play struggled maybe for the first month or so of the season, but since then has been operating at an elite level. Whereas for the Canucks power play, it's been the opposite. They came out of the gates firing on all cylinders and have since struggled.
Struggled again. And look, the players and even Rick Tocchet, you know, scratching, trying to find some positives and silver linings and the looks that they got. But ultimately, you have to put pucks on the net to put pucks in the net. And the Vancouver Canucks had 6 minutes of power play time in this hockey game and had four shots on goal. So much passing around the perimeter. Not exactly sure what they're looking for. If it's for the perfect look, it's not materializing for them. Pia Suter is the bumper. That's becoming a topic in this market, and understandably so for a guy that has one goal in his last 25 games, and that was at even strength, so hasn't scored a power play goal in forever. And I don't want to dump on Pia Suter, but it does feel like it's not happening for him. Maybe it is time to look elsewhere, but when you have a JT Miller, when you have an Elias Pettersson, you've got a Quinn Hughes and a Brock Besser, and a power play that has scored an elite level at times this year and throughout that group's time together, you know, Pia Suter should just be an additional piece to those four, and there's still enough talent there to somehow make this thing go, but it's becoming a massive issue. It's 29th in the National Hockey League since the All-Star break, and in these tight games and on this homestand, there have been a handful of games where a power play goal here or there may have turned the result and allowed the Canucks to at least get a single point or, you know, get a game to overtime and take their chances. Whatever the case, back-to-back losses now to the Kings and the Stars. 4-3-1, eight games into the homestand. That is four wins and four losses. Now, there was the OTL to Colorado, so they get a single point there. But if we're just looking at wins and losses, four wins, four losses at this time of year on this homestand, I have to think the hockey club was hoping for and expecting better.
Yeah, and they're not getting the types of offensive bounces that they were in the first half of the season,
for
especially
sure.
from the bottom six lines. And part of it, of course, is they aren't generating the same. Part of it is shooting percentage regression. And part of it is also, at the start of the season, you had Nils Höglander on the fourth line. He was such a strong play driver from that spot. And understandably, he's earned a promotion up the lineup. But when that happens, now it creates a hole in terms of you've lost your best fourth line player. Up until recently, of course, up until this game specifically, Dakota Joshua was out. And in recent games, Connor Garland was playing up the lineup. And that in some part is because they've also been missing the player they thought they were getting when they went out and acquired Elias Lindholm,
sure.
which was a top six winger. Of course, he hasn't been healthy recently, but that's a bit of a hole as well. Even as we talk about the power play as well, that bumper spot, Elias Lindholm was a bumper player in Calgary on that top unit. And part of it is the handedness is different. I think for the Canucks, in that bumper spot, a left shot is ideal just because of JT Miller also being on that left half wall. But it really feels like offense, especially as other teams tighten up defensively, a lot of games where it's just been one or two or at best three goals, especially against the top teams.
Look at the difference in this hockey game. Jamie Benn, the Pride of Victoria, scores the winner on a bang-bang play, essentially from the bumper, that the Canucks just aren't getting that goal right now. And again, I don't want to put this on Pia Suter, but it's not happening for him. You know, are there alternatives? Could you give Höglander a look there to see Pod Colson's the left-handed shot? If it's just about a guy, you know, hammering away, it feels like they can't allow this power play just to die on the vine here into the final 10 games of the regular season and then into the playoffs. And people will say, hey, the whistles go away in the playoffs. Again, you're going to be in tight games where if you get a power play opportunity, you have to make it count. Now, they're not going to go 100%, obviously. They won't go 50% come playoff time, but it has to be a difference maker. And it just feels like they're not wearing the penalty kill down either. That's the thing. It's all to the perimeter. Right now, they feel like a team that's struggling to find its confidence, but in the same breath, they're allowing almost the penalty kill should be taxing. Like if you don't score, it should be 2 minutes of tough shifts. And it just feels like teams are prepared to allow the Canucks to pass it around the outside and they'll just stand their ground and, you know, wait until the Canucks look threatening. And unfortunately, it feels like we're all waiting a little too long these days.
Yeah, since the Canucks have had this core of Miller, Pettersson, Hughes, mostly making up the nucleus of power play one, I know Brock's rotated in and out, but for multiple years, they've never been a unit that creates a ton of east-west passes, right? And that's important in terms of getting the penalty kill to shift from one side of the ice to the other, creating some mismatches, getting the goalie moving in his crease. But they were able to compensate for that because so often they either had Miller slipping it straight to Bowen in the bumper or that tic-tac-toe play where went Miller down low to a right shot, like to even going back to Tyler Toffoli in that spot or Brock Besser back up to Bo. And Horvat had by far the most power play goals for the Canucks the last few years. So they're really missing that type of high-end finisher because if you can't create enough east-west movement with your passing in terms of Miller to Pettersson and converting on those types of opportunities, and you're not able to able to have an effective shooting presence from the bumper, then you're going to be stuck with the puck just playing sort of catch around the perimeter. And I know Rick Tocchet on the podium was talking about sometimes you just need those greasy types of goals. And I get what he's saying from one angle, but look at the way the Stars scored both of theirs. I mean, you referenced the Ben one, but even the Roope hits, that's technically a dirty goal in that it was a rebound. But look at the crisp passing movement in and out from the bumper. How many times they were exchanging. Elias Pettersson was sprawling on the ice, completely beat. One of the NHL's smartest players, just completely bamboozled by the Stars' passing play on that one, preceding the goal. Some of it is the finesse aspect, too. It's not just they just need to get pucks on net and crash it. They are missing some of that passing movement to get it into the inside.
Well, let's jump right into that first goal then. Roope Hintz is 27th of the year from Robertson and Ben. A minute and 10 seconds left in the first period. Coach's challenge. And, you know, in real time, yeah, I mean, Jason Robertson bats that puck. And then clearly the Canucks felt it was a high stick. They challenge a lengthy delay. And the longer it went, I thought, they're going to find an angle that is going to rule this thing in favor of the Canucks. I thought that goal was coming back. Now, admittedly, my guess is on coach's challenge, usually goaltender interference. I'm wrong almost all the time. So who knows? Tocchet always talks about being a coin flip. He did again to describe this game. So maybe I'd be better off just flipping a coin when it goes to a coach's challenge. Whatever the case, this one, like, there is evidence. People have done screen grabs. Jason Robertson's shoulders are sort of tilted, and it does look like the puck is higher than his lower shoulder, but maybe not his back shoulder. Who knows? Referees, the league put out a quick statement that just said, you know, referees and didn't find enough evidence to overturn it. So a bit of an unfortunate break, because I do think it was pretty much a 50-50 call there, but it stands. And like Los Angeles the other night, you know, they get the jump. The Canucks have been so good at getting the first goal of hockey games and sort of building on that here. You know, they're behind. It's a power play goal. Ian Cole had a chance to clear. Boy, he had the puck on his stick with a little bit of time. And I know that that's been a lament to the coach as well. The Canucks haven't done, I mean, they've been better this month, but at times when their penalty kill is sagged, you can track it back to a failed clearing attempt. And Ian Cole, I think, on that one had to do a better job, probably had to do a better job tying up Roope Hintz at the side of the net. But what did you make of the call, non-call, the coach's challenge?
Yeah, it's funny. When I saw the first replay, which was played sort of in real time, not slowed down, I actually thought, okay, this is really close, and I actually thought it might go in Dallas' favor. But then I went frame by frame, and the more times I looked at it, the same way they would have done it in Toronto, the more I was convinced that there's no way you could call that a good goal. Honestly, looking at frame by frame, how the puck, the trajectory of the puck, the arc it takes, when Robertson contacts the puck, it's basically at chin level, which is quite clearly above the shoulder. Yeah. So again, I just can't understand how they took their time with that review.
Yeah.
It felt like at least a few minutes, if not longer. And looking at it from so many different angles, slow motion, all these screen grabs, I really do think they got that one wrong.
And that's tough. I mean, players just want the calls right. And clearly the Canucks felt that there was enough there. And I'd have to go back and look, but I do think it's the first coach's challenge that the Canucks have come up on the wrong end of. So clearly their eyes in the sky thought so. Rick Tocchet was convinced on their advice to challenge it. Not only do they not win the challenge, the goal stands, but the rules are failed challenge. Canucks are shorthanded again. And so that was dicey, the final minute and 10 seconds of the first period, just to get out, you know, where it looked like maybe it was going to be scoreless in the first period where not a whole lot was happening. And then you worried, like, are they going to get out of this thing down 2-0? And they were able to hold off that second Dallas power play. And then in the second, I thought the Canucks started to come on. And obviously the JT Miller goal, spectacular play by Connor Garland, takes the hit. Looked like maybe a bit of a dirty hit on the end boards from Miro Heiskanen. Whatever the case, Garland plays to the whistle. He wasn't going to stop. No look, behind the back, pass into the wheelhouse of JT Miller, who was coming up Main Street. We've seen JT score big-time goals for the Canucks. I thought that they might be able to harness the energy in the building. You know, they tie the game at one. And then that was it for the Canucks scoring on the night. So missed opportunity, I suppose, because in that second period, there was the sequence where Teddy Bluger was set up by Connor Garland. Great look. I am starting to wonder if Teddy Bluger's ever going to score again. And then that was followed up. Sam Lafferty, there was a sort of, puck was in skates and nobody could get to it. And eventually Lafferty did. And I think it tipped up high and went ultimately into the netting, but it looked dangerous there for a moment. Ilya Mikheyev later in the second period down left wing and just drilled it right into Jake Oettinger's logo. So, you know, this comes back to this notion of depth scoring and, you know, Bluger with a chance. And I know Lafferty scored a nice goal the other night, but Sam Lafferty doesn't score an awful lot, certainly hasn't in the second half of the season. And Ilya Mikheyev, we know his struggles. And then in the third period, Pia Suter on a 2-on-1 elected to hold on down the left side. And again, just drills it right at the goaltender. And so the Canucks had some opportunities at 5-on-5, but wrong guys had the puck on their stick.
It also became a special teams battle after that goal, which, yeah. Again, if we want to talk about what went wrong for the team, if it had been a 5-on-5 battle, I really believe that they would have been able to harness that energy, build on it, because, man, it really went from being quiet and, I don't want to say library-like, but there just wasn't a lot going on in that game offensively for either team.
It's funny, for all the build-up and two division leaders, I didn't think that the building had that pop that I expected. Like, I think there was way more buildup for the game than the energy ultimately that was present in the building. And I don't know if it was nervous energy because there wasn't a whole lot going on and it was a tight game and the Canucks never led, but you're right. It had stayed 5-on-5. Maybe there was that shift in the second period, Quinn Hughes right up the gut. He had a really good look. So I talk about some of the guys, you know, that you don't expect a lot from, but when Quinn has the puck on his stick in those situations, generally good things happen for the Vancouver Canucks. And then early in the third, Pettersson with Hoglander and Besser, Hughes and Hronek is a five-man unit, absolutely went to town 5-on-5, and again, in a 1-1 game, and I thought, all right, like the go-ahead goal is here. It's just a matter of time. Like, they're going to get it. They didn't get it, but they did have the kind of shift that, you know, quite often will yield some sort of offense.
Yeah, I think overall, though, and it's not to say that they were decisively outplayed, but especially on a night where Miller drew the short end of the stick in terms of line mates,
yes,
right? Separated from Brock Besser, which has rarely happened this year, and I thought was a curious decision. Miller was dragging Archie Baines, who was just called up, and Sam Lafferty, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So he's got two players that can't really create offense consistently at an NHL level. So you've essentially loaded up that Pettersson line. And Miller's also taking most of the minutes against that Roope-Hintz line. You would have wanted to see a little bit more consistent offensive generation from Pettersson and that line. And it just didn't happen. But the flip side of the coin also was that, again, from Dallas's perspective, their top six didn't create a lot either. It was mostly that that quote-unquote third line with Johnston and Benn that created some havoc. But considering how dynamite the Stars have been offensively, I'm going to transition the call it yellow flag of Pettersson and maybe not getting enough offense there to a silver lining from this game, which is that defensively against one of the top offensive teams in the NHL, 0 5-on-5 goals against. And I know that that Dallas created a lot of those net front scrambles and it looked dicey in situations, but they do that against every team. That's their bread and butter. And the important thing was the Canucks maintained inside position on those situations. There were a couple of sequences where like Marchment is right there on a rebound, I think it was, and Hronek takes him down to deny the rebound chance. They defended really well, and this is why the power play aspect is so frustrating, because this Canucks team is so good defensively at this point and at 5-on-5 as a whole that if they can just get the power play going, they really start to profile like a team that can go deep into the playoffs. But that power play really is starting to concern me, because if it doesn't get back on track, I'm not convinced this team can go deep in the playoffs. I expect them still to be competitive, hopefully win at least one round. But beyond that, to have success, their power play needs to be clicking at a consistent rate.
Right, because, look, JT Miller scores the only goal in this hockey game for the Vancouver Canucks, scored the winner against Calgary in the third period the other night against Los Angeles. It was Besser with the bounce goal, but Besser, obviously, the team's leading goal scorer. Now, Sam Lafferty did score, but as we said, it's a challenge for him most nights. It has been in the second half of the season, but against Calgary, Nils Höglander, who's fourth on this team in goals. So you got Höglander scoring a couple. You've got Miller, who has two in the last couple of games. Besser, and then obviously you need more from Elias Pettersson. That's been well documented. But beyond those guys, like I tweeted this out after the hockey game, and I do think this is a fair question now. Is offense a concern for the Vancouver Canucks? Because six of the 12 forwards in uniform tonight with one or no goals since the All-Star break. That's 23 games. Now, Dakota Joshua, obviously, this was just his sixth game, and Archie Baines, his sixth as well. We'll excuse those two. But you know, Teddy Bluger hasn't scored since the game out of the Christmas break against Philadelphia. Pia Suter has one in 25 games now. Ilya Mikheyev has won since Christmas. Vasily Podkolzin, while you like the hustle, if you're in uniform, you're one of 12 forwards that has the possibility, at the very least, of scoring, and there just isn't a whole lot of offense there. And so it puts pressure on those top-end guys at 5-on-5, and then, as we've talked about here at length now, it puts a ton of pressure on the power play. And for a team that scored at will in the first half of the season, kind of feels crazy to even be asking that question now. But as you said, they've transitioned to this defensive arm. They haven't given up more than three in regulation this month. And yet, as we said, they're basically a 500 hockey club. Like, it's there for you if you can generate even a little more offense, get a few of these games to overtime, even if you don't win them, get some single points along the way. But, you know, back-to-back losses now, 20th regulation loss of the season. So the Canucks are 45-20-8. They're stuck on those 98 points where they have been since they beat the Calgary Flames. The problem was that Edmonton beat Los Angeles, so the Oilers within six now with two games in hand and that head-to-head matchup coming up in April. So the Canucks haven't closed the door on the Edmonton Oilers. Vegas was a winner earlier, so the Vegas Golden Knights have actually leapfrogged past the LA Kings, who lost in Edmonton, and Vegas is into that three-hole in the Pacific Division by a single point, and the Kings drop back to wild card two. Nashville finally lost outright for the first time in forever. Not sure I would have guessed that Arizona was going to be the team that did the job, but the Coyotes take care of the Nashville Predators. So a little bit of volatility in and around the Canucks, and again, this is going to continue to change almost on a nightly basis. Vegas beat Winnipeg, so the Jets' troubles continue. Colorado lost to the Rangers in a shootout, so Colorado got a single point. And the Dallas Stars, the first team in the West to get to 100 points, are now up to 101. And look, I mentioned all of that because Canucks have nine games to go. Dallas is now 3 points clear and showing no signs of slowing down. Six straight wins. They have won 11 of their last 13 hockey games. 720 goal scorers, and Jamie Benn isn't one of them, and yet he's the hottest guy on the team. He scored in six straight games, gets the winner here. He's at 18, so he'll be a 20-goal scorer before the season is done as well. And I just think Dallas now with a three-point lead on the Canucks, not insurmountable, but with nine games to go, even a lead like 3 points is a lot to make up, because if the Canucks were going to catch the Dallas Stars now, you know, they'd have to win a handful of games in a row and get help. And I just don't see Dallas slowing down. I don't know that Dallas is going to run the table, but I think for the Canucks, look, Sunday now becomes a fairly significant hockey game. It's the end of the homestand. It's the Anaheim Ducks. They get them on the back end of a back-to-back. They're in Edmonton on Saturday, so the Oilers are probably going to feast on the Ducks. And then the Canucks have to. I mean, they simply have to do the same thing against a sad sack Anaheim team that doesn't have a lot to play for, doesn't score, and doesn't win an awful lot. But I didn't think at the outset of the homestand, especially the way it started with that 5-0 win over Winnipeg, didn't think I'd be saying that, man, like there's some heft to this game against the Ducks on Easter Sunday afternoon.
And it makes for an interesting goaltending decision as well, because this morning at Skate before the game, Tocchet said that they want to get Seelovs and potentially into multiple games. Of course, they have, as they go out onto the road, they have a back-to-back against Vegas and in Arizona. So you assume he'll get into one of those. But Talk had also hinted that Seelovs is a possibility against Anaheim, but given that you lost, do you still go to him for that first start, given that this is a team you'd really want to take care of business with?
It's interesting now because all along I kind of felt like this was a Seelovs start. And then I had somebody in my mentions suggest, like, really the important games for the Vancouver Canucks now are Anaheim, Arizona on the back half of the back-to-backs. They have Arizona twice and the Calgary Flames along with Anaheim. Like, those are four games the Canucks simply have to win. And the guy in my mentions was like, let Seelovs face Vegas on Tuesday. Like, if that game really isn't as big a deal as making sure that you take care of those sitters that are there for you. And it kind of got me thinking that, like, maybe there's a little bit of logic to that. There's a chance to face Vegas in the playoffs and, you know, maybe you throw them a little bit of a curveball and maybe hold back. Who knows? We'll see how it all goes. But I do think the coaching staff has a decision. When I walked away from the morning skate this morning, it certainly felt like that was earmarked to be an Artur Seelovs game. Friday, a full day off for the Vancouver Canucks. They'll be back at practice on Saturday and then the early start with no morning skate. So who knows when we'll find out the goaltending decision. But by puck drop at 12:30 on Sunday afternoon, we'll know who the Canucks are going to battle with against the Anaheim Ducks. And again, the Ducks in Edmonton on Saturday. So it's back-to-back for them, 3-4. And the Canucks have to make sure that matters. Look, there's a lot still to dig into. Dakota Joshua back in the lineup. Archdeep Baines, want to talk about him. We've touched on the special teams and the struggles, obviously, the Vancouver Canucks when it comes to offense. You're going to hear from Rick Tocchet. You're going to hear from JT Miller, who, despite scoring the only goal, took this loss on his shoulders. Is it leadership? Is it honesty? Is it all of that? You're going to hear from JT in his own words. You'll hear from Casey DeSmith as well. And then we'll get to the stat that stands out. We'll get to some listener feedback. We've got our three-star selection as well. So lots still to come on a night that the Dallas Stars come to town. They defeat the Vancouver Canucks by a score of 3-1. They take the season series from the Canucks with the wins in 2 of 3. The Canucks shut them out way back in November, but Dallas won just before Christmas in overtime and win this one in regulation. Jeff and Harm with you. 3-1 the final, the Stars over the Canucks. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The Stars beat the Vancouver Canucks. Canucks wrap up this 9-game marathon homestand on Sunday afternoon. Jeff and Harm with you on Rinkwide Vancouver. Going to hear from Rick Tocchet here in a sec. Final shots on goal in the hockey game, 33-28. Underlying numbers, the Stars held a slight edge. I guess most of the third period was played at a one-all score. So it wasn't like score effects were in place. The Stars, according to Natural Stat Trick, controlled 54% of all shot attempts at 5-on-5. The shots for were 20-19 in Dallas's favor. The scoring chances 28-24. So a narrow edge there. And even the high dangers pretty similar. How about the first period? One high danger at 5-on-5. The Stars had it. The Canucks had a pretty good chance. Garland set up Elias Pettersson in tight, but that was 4-on-4. But 5-on-5, yeah, this was a slow build in this hockey game. There really wasn't a whole lot. It was like the Kings left their blueprint behind in the locker room that the Stars were using. And the Stars were like, hey, it worked for you guys the other night. We'll try and just drag this thing down as well. But not a whole lot happening in that first period of play.
Oh, yeah, it was. And that's where when I earlier on the show referenced how quiet it was in the building. I think it's largely because that first period, like, there just weren't a lot of moments that would get a fan out of their seat. And I'm not even just talking about scoring. I'm talking about physicality. I'm talking about near chances, rushes each way. It was very low event. And it wasn't until the second period where things started to become more exciting and there was some buildup. And that's when the crowd started going nuts, when Garland set up Miller on such a filthy, filthy sequence. I mean, that was electric. And it's a shame that after that, the flow of the game sort of got disrupted with the penalties. And anytime it got to special team situations, it didn't work in Vancouver's favor.
Well, it's kind of funny because Patrick Johnson, post-media, was sitting with us along press row. And we all kind of remarked at one point there, kind of midway through the first period, the shots were 7-1 for the Canucks. And it was like, really? And there were 13 hits or something by that point of the hockey game. And just, I don't know, it kind of felt like whoever was controlling the stats clock was a little trigger happy or whatever, because it didn't feel like there had been that many events in the hockey game to that point. We've touched on it. Let's hear from the head coach. Just the fact that this power play really is spinning its wheels, and it's not like it's coming close and just missing. They're going to have to sort this out with 9 games to go now. Rick Tocchet on the idea of, you know, getting to the net, getting pucks to the net and getting bodies there, whatever the case. They got to do some things that they're not doing. This is Rick Tocchet at a little bit of a loss to figure out what's happening with this power play right now.
Sometimes the power play, you know, you got to get those gritty things. You know, you need 3 people to the net and like too many set plays. And I think sometimes it burns us. We're trying to get guys to understand that we got to get the puck to the net. There's got to be gritty goals on power plays. It can't be pretty. That's really, you know, they got a couple tonight, but yeah, unfortunate.
Thought he was going to speak in rhymes there for a sec when he said, "Don't have to be pretty, you got to be gritty." And I wasn't sure where else. This is what Talk's going to get to now. He's going to start busting out rhymes at the podium after hockey games. But he felt it funny just listening to him tonight. And he's a fascinating guy to deal with. I think you would agree. I mean, you learn a lot of times from the things that he says. But he did seem out of sorts, I thought, at the podium tonight, just kind of grasping right now to figure out for a team that's struggling to score, has lost these back-to-back games to teams that, you know, even though the Kings are behind the Canucks the way they play, you know, they got to figure out a way to break that system down. And the Dallas Stars, again, didn't give the Canucks an awful lot. I just kind of felt like this was a searching Rick Tocchet at the podium after this hockey game.
I would agree. Usually he is so confident and seems to have his mind made up very convincingly on, this is the answer, this is what we need to do, this is where we let up, this is what I liked about our game. And in terms of the creating offense aspect, whether it was the power play, whether it was at even strength, the idea of getting to the inside, or even just on other questions, it seemed like he wasn't as certain about his assessment and takes. And yeah, specifically relating to the power play, a couple other points I want to bring up. So he referenced needing to play with a little bit more grit there. The one area where they could have used that, I think, was winning loose pucks. That's a lot of times where when they attempted shots, whether they hit the net or not, whether they were blocked, missed the net, in the corners and as the pucks sort of rimmed around on the other side, it really felt like they were one and done in those situations. There were a couple of plays where Miller on pucks that 8 or 9 times out of 10, he's able to corral and decisively win that he lost. And even one of them in the first period that the Canucks had a power play. It was their first opportunity where he missed one of those. The Stars went back the other way and Hintz had a shorthanded chance that he nearly converted on backdoor. They didn't do a great job of winning loose pucks on the power play either. And the other point that Miller brought up that I thought was fascinating as it relates to the power play was that Dallas's PK had a bit of a different look mm-hmm. than they had pre-scouted going into it. So part of it is they were caught off guard there and then weren't able to adapt.
Let's hear from JT Miller because, again, this guy, people know this by now, he wears his heart on his sleeve, a pretty emotional guy. Clearly frustrated, not just in this game, but back-to-back losses now when that playoff X is sitting there waiting 100 points, again trying to fend off an Edmonton team that is within striking distance, but the Canucks still have a six-point lead. Whatever the case, JT scored the only goal for the Canucks, 35 on the season. His only shot on goal, his only shot attempt of the hockey game, and Miller, despite being the only guy to score, said that he had to do more in this hockey game.
I don't think we're getting to the inside enough, you know, myself. You know, I'm you know, it's not really creating or driving play right now for me. So I need to be better. And as a leader on the team, I hold myself to a higher standard than that. I mean, I feel like I'm one and done a lot.
All right, some candid comments from JT Miller. Holds himself to a higher standard. You like that? He wears an A. We know that he's a leader on this team. A lot of one and dones, and it is hard to disagree with that. I mean, we kind of ran through the scoring chances, and there were some for the Vancouver Canucks, but, you know, those long sustained shifts, stacking shifts, those were in short order in this hockey game.
Yeah, and from Miller's perspective, it's been really fascinating over the years to get his thoughts at various stretches of his performance in the season. And one thing you tend to realize pretty quickly is that he doesn't really seem like a guy that measures his effectiveness based off his point production, because there will be stretches in previous seasons where I remember he isn't necessarily scoring a ton of points, but he'll tell you straight up, honestly, I think I'm playing well. I think I'm doing the right things. I'm moving my feet. I think it'll eventually come. And then there will also be situations that are the reverse, like this game where he gets on the score sheet and has been productive a lot recently, but he's judging himself based off how much play am I driving. He's got a different set of criteria in his mm-hmm. in his own head. And I mean, I get what he's saying in the sense that, yeah, there wasn't a lot of consistent offensive output from that line, but I'm also cutting him huge slack considering the lack of help that he had on his wingers. He's far from the list of issues that that they have.
So his line tonight with Baines and Lafferty, two shots on goal. His goal didn't even come. It was in a broken line. And again, a great pass by Garland. But yeah, just two shots for that line. Baines had one, Miller had one, and Lafferty didn't figure on the shot clock in this hockey game. Dakota Joshua back after missing 18 games. And obviously they missed him in his size. And he was out there late in the extra attacker. And Tocchet said he deserved to be the way that he played. He was involved in a questionable play in the third period. Again, 1-1. And you're thinking, all right, the next penalty could be costly. Miro Heiskanen looked like it may have been boarding. It may have been interference, at least in real time. I was surprised. Let's hear from Dakota Joshua. Then we can come back and we talk about the play in question. But Joshua was asked, like, should there have been a penalty on that play? And he was saying, yeah, maybe not so much.
No, I think I lost my footing. I'll have to go back and look at it again. I know he wasn't intentional, but still, I wasn't happy.
All right, so maybe the refs got that one right. I know that people in the building were outraged and kind of felt that he had been interfered with. I did think there was contact before the puck was there. I thought it was interference more than it was boarding, but whatever the case, arms stay down. You could tell Joshua was frustrated. A little scrum ensued after that play. Did they miss that call? We talked about the one in the first period. Do you think the refs got that one right?
I'm 50-50 on that one. Yeah. I'd need to see a couple more replays, to be totally honest with you, because seeing it in real time, whether it was interference or boarding, I thought it was a 50-50, could have been called. But I was also looking at the game situation, 1-1, third period. Those are the types of calls you're not always going to get from the ref. So I wasn't holding my breath. I wasn't outraged that they didn't call that one. And especially now that we have the added context that Joshua was already kind of falling a little bit, I can understand why they didn't call it. What I was a little bit surprised by, and again, I haven't seen the replay on the Bluger at the end penalty either, but considering they were letting some things go, did you get a chance to see the replay?
Yeah, he got his stick, kind of raked I can't remember which player it was, but I thought that one, it's a judgment call. I mean, he put it in the hands of the officials and they elected to make that call. So I didn't think he really had a leg to stand on if he was going to argue that, you know, the stick didn't get up or there shouldn't have been a call there. Just back to Joshua for a sec. Final numbers on him in his return to the lineup. 15 minutes and 47 seconds of ice time. One shot on goal. A team-high 6 hits, so he was trying to be physical. A takeaway and won 2 of the 3 faceoffs. So what did you make of Dakota Joshua's night?
I liked him. I thought he was energetic. I thought he looked quick. That was one area that I was curious to see after missing all that time. How would his feet look, especially change of directions? And he was noticeable. He was involved. Talk had brought up, which I hadn't even noticed initially on the play. But when Garland set up Miller for that beautiful chance, Talk had made the point that Dakota drove straight to the net, and that created the space higher up in the slot for Miller to jump into. And had Joshua taken a different route, that space and that pass would not have been available. And I thought that was an interesting observation. I hadn't caught that in real time. So there's some movement away from the puck that helped help lead to that goal. So yeah, I thought it was a great first game back in terms of, yeah, is there more room for him to be even better? Sure. But considering he'd missed all that time, I think as far as first games back go, that that was as good as I could have expected.
Yeah, it was our first look at Archdeep Baines in his second go-around in the National Hockey League, those first 5 games. Then he got sent down, has been back in Abbotsford for a month, basically been a point-a-game guy in the American Hockey League. During that stint, still leads Abbotsford with 49 points. And the coach pointed to the speed of Archdeep Baines, noticed that in this hockey game, and the fact that he drew a couple of penalties in that first time, the 5-game stint. He took a couple too many penalties, but helping the club in that regard, at least using the speed to get a leg up on he and JT off to the races there in the second period. Craig Smith was forced to hook him. So again, would you like some offense? Sure, but I think he looked comfortable. I thought in a big stakes game, I thought Archdeep Baines looked all right in this one.
Yeah, it was much better at the very least than his last big game, which was against LA. And on that occasion, it felt like he was fighting the puck, couldn't settle passes, plays were kind of dying on a stick. Whereas in this one, he was better in terms of not dragging his line down. But you also at some point, hopefully as he becomes a little bit more comfortable, you want to see him creating a little bit more offense. Like I still go back to that first game in Colorado where his playmaking, especially below the goal line, a couple of smart passes. And that's one thing where when you watch Baines at the AHL level, and of course, creating offense at the NHL level is much more difficult. But when you watch him in the AHL, he is such a smart player and he has that vision. And for whatever reason, it's taking time for that playmaking side for that to be unleashed since that Colorado game. Because in that one, he set up a 2-3 high danger chances. And I'm thinking, okay, like there might be something here. And I'm still kind of waiting for that side to show up a little bit.
Baines played 10 minutes and 39 seconds, one shot on goal, a couple of attempts. Now, the underlying numbers weren't kind to him. The shot share, just 30% of the shot attempts at 5-on-5, 7 for Dallas and 3 for the Vancouver Canucks. But the actual shots on goal in his 5-on-5 ice time, 1 apiece, and he wasn't on the ice for goals either way. So we'll see. Did he do enough to stay ahead of Phil DiGiuseppe and Nils Amon? Those are the options for Rick Tocchet. We talked about the fact that it's not like, there's a ton of offense waiting in the wings here, regardless who the depth guys are on Sunday against the Anaheim Ducks. All right, let's look at the 3 stars in this hockey game. The 3 stars selected by the Sportsnet broadcast crew in the building. A little surprise to these. Jake Oettinger was the first star. Casey DeSmith, the second star. So, a game that's 1-1 for the longest stretch. I understand the goaltenders played a role here, but I'm not sure that either one of them was spectacular. The shots were 33-28, as we said. And then the third star was Jamie Benn. Look, Jamie Benn scores the winner. He scored in 6 straight games, has 7 goals over that stretch. So right now, on fire, he got his 900th point in the National Hockey League against the team that he grew up watching and cheering for over on the island. So a milestone night for Jamie Benn, and he had an assist as well. So 2-point night for him. Roope Hintz in on all 3 of the goals. I'm going Roope Hintz as the second star. And then I thought Connor Garland of all the Vancouver Canucks, the motor's always running, the setup for Petey in the first period, the play that he makes to JT Miller on the goal. He had the rebound chance of a Quinn Hughes shot with about 8 minutes to go in a 1-1 tie. Coulda, woulda, didn't. But out there with the extra attacker as well. So he was buzzing, and I think certainly deserving of the third star honor.
It's astonishing to see how many battles he wins for a guy that is that small. There was one sequence in the third period where he was running out of space on a zone entry sequence, sort of just chipped it off the boards, tried to get onto it himself. Nils Lundqvist, the Stars defenseman, had a clear edge to the puck in terms of the angle, the route. And 80 to 90% of those situations, a defenseman is able to cleanly corral possession, go D to D, or make a place up, make a play up the ice. And instead, Garland just leveraging his low center of gravity, getting underneath, tying Lundqvist up. Then the second forward, I think it may have been Blueger, I'm not totally sure, swooped in as well. And the Canucks turned that into an offensive zone possession. It's little sequences like that which explain why Garland, his underlying numbers are always so dominant, and why the Canucks always tend to be in the offensive end when he's on the ice.
So there you go. The three stars here on Rinkwide: Jamie Benn, Roope Hintz, Connor Garland. There's still plenty to get to, a number of topics. I want to ask you about Elias Pettersson's night as well. We really haven't talked about him other than as part of a failing power play right now, but some of the numbers may surprise when it comes to Elias Pettersson. Maybe they don't, because we know the player that he is and can be. So we'll get to that. We'll get the stat that stands out, listener feedback, and a thought or two on the homestand finale coming up on Sunday with the Ducks in town. 3-1, the Stars beat the Canucks. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Rinkwide Vancouver, the Canucks falling 3-1 to the Dallas Stars. Jeff and Harm with you here. Hey, before we get to the stat that stands out, we've been telling you about this event coming up on April the 20th. Tickets are now available. This is the Bro Do Your Playoffs. It's going to be a media event, a preview of the playoffs, celebrating the return of playoff hockey to Vancouver. The Canucks still need to get that X beside their name, but they're going to be there with 98 points. But yeah, we're going to have some fun. And it's all part of a fundraiser as well for a terrific cause, as the event's in support of BC Mental Health Foundation. And we'll be remembering our buddy Jason Botchford as well. The event is presented by Fountain Tire. Again, April the 20th. Tickets are available. $10. So don't use the excuse that you can't afford it. $10. It'll be a bunch of fun, a lot of hockey talk, some stories about Botch as well. Your tickets, you can get those at nationgear.ca. April 20th, Bro Do Your Playoffs. All right, the stat that stands out for me is the fact that Dallas went 2-for-5 on the power play. Can't be taking 5 penalties. Canucks took 4, and then they were slapped with the 1 for the failed challenge as well. But you add it all up, and Dallas had 5 power play attempts. They scored on 2 of them. You know, what's interesting, Harm, is we're getting to the end of the homestand at the end of the month. These two Dallas goals on the power play, the first two 5-on-4 power play goals the Canucks have given up all month. Colorado scored 5-on-3 and 4-on-3 in overtime. Canucks hadn't given up a conventional penalty kill goal this entire month, but unfortunately that streak came to an end, and in a big way, with the Stars scoring twice. So it's a kick in the you-know-where for the Canucks and their penalty kill, but their penalty kill has been really good for most of this month, and that's with Casey DeSmith in there. Like, you know, some days you'd say, hey, well, Thatcher Demko bailed him out, whatever the case. The performance on the penalty kill hasn't fallen with Casey DeSmith in there, and we said that, you know, Colorado's the only team to score 4 on them the entire month as well. So defensively continuing to give themselves chances here, but pretty hard to win at this time of the year, and it'll be tough to win in the playoffs if you know, you lose the special teams battle as handily as the Canucks did in this hockey game.
Well, it's so funny, the storyline that we have around this team right now. Because imagine a year ago telling somebody that the Canucks are elite defensively, creating offense is the issue right now. And oh, by the way, out of the two special teams, yeah, it's the it's the previously 32-ranked PK that is now the strength of this team, yeah, and the previously successful power play that has been the problem for most of the year.
No, it's true, but it's also true that the special teams they just got to find a way. And it's going to be really fascinating to watch over these final nine games, what they do, if they continue to tinker with the power play, or if they just keep trotting those same five guys out and tell them to figure it out. But again, penalty kill, for the most part this month, has been very good for the Vancouver Canucks. So this kind of went against form, but well, you're going to see good teams come playoff time, and you're going to see teams that have good power plays. You know, if they run into the Oilers at some point, or the Colorado Avalanche, or you know, the Vegas Golden Knights will be able to throw some solid players out there on their power play as well, if that turns out to be their first round opponent. So we'll see how all the dust settles. Again, there'll be a bunch of changes in the standings between now and the end of the season, so we won't go too much further there in trying to figure out who that first round opponent's going to be. But bottom line is, Canucks going to have to up their power play and just continue to find ways to solidify things with the penalty kill. And look, on a night where you give up two power play goals, you know, it's probably safe to say that you miss Elias Lindholm. Like, that is an area where faceoff wins, and he's been good in shot suppression since he arrived. I know that there hasn't been a lot of offense, but yes, they got Dakota Joshua back, and he'll help. He and JT Miller were out there as the penalty killing forwards on the Jamie Benn goal. So unfortunately for Dakota Joshua, you know, the return to the lineup individually and collectively as a group didn't go exactly the way that he wanted. But that's our stat that stands out. Dallas goes 2-for-5, while the Canucks were 0-for-3. All right, we'll get to some listener feedback here, as we always do on Rinkwide, and we appreciate all of the contributions to our social channels. At Rinkwide Van, Hassan saying power play was the problem again. Blame the refs if you want, but Canucks missed out on the man advantage. It's cost them games down the stretch. And sure, I've been pointing this out. I think, you know, the Colorado game, you know, 3-3 game, they had a power play in the third. They didn't score there. Might have been different. Washington down a goal in the third period, had a power play, couldn't do anything with it. Here tonight, had some early power plays, and even against Los Angeles the other night, had the first power play of the game. Like, if you get the lead on the Kings, maybe you're able to force the issue more than they were on Monday night. So, yeah, power play has cost them some points here in the games that they have lost on the homestand. Justin says the power play is going to be their downfall. It looks so lost. I don't see an obvious fix either, other than better execution and more urgency. You can imagine that the inbox is just filled with the power play takes when it comes to the Vancouver Canucks. Phil says if they can't get the pee-pee going, Canucks are going to be quickly eliminated. Jimmy says special teams lost this one. Need to be more disciplined. Need clearer ozone passing to the center and getting pucks on net. Far too many shots missed the target. I know that was an issue for Rick Tocchet. Was it the Washington game? I think it was the one that they lost. And he lamented after the game, I think there were 48 attempts that were either blocked or missed the target entirely. When I look at this night, the Canucks had 14 shots that missed the net, 19 were blocked by the Dallas Stars. You know, they got Chris Tanev. He blocked shots, right? That's what he does. Although, when I look at Chris Tanev, he had two blocked shots. So he didn't lead the hockey club in blocked shots. Hit the post in the third period, although I do think it was the outside of the post, but it certainly clanged. You could hear it all the way up in the press box. Wouldn't that have been something if Chris Tanev had been the guy to score to break the one-all stalemate and score the winner? A guy that has, what, two goals on the season. He is not there to produce a lot of offense, but he does make that already good team that much better. A couple other people that weighing in here. Bottom line is we don't have any serious game changer on this team. What exactly is Pettersson, regular season player? Now, I mentioned earlier, I wanted to ask you about Elias Pettersson's night, because according to the stat sheet, Harm, 4 shots on 11 attempts for Elias Pettersson. Did it feel like an 11-attempt
night? No. It didn't feel like he was that noticeable.
Yeah, I mean, that one, that could have been the stat that stands out, just because, again, we talked about the fact that only 4 shots on goal on the power play. I'd have to look at a breakdown of how many of his attempts were at evens and how many with the man advantage, but he had 11 attempts. Quinn Hughes had 10. So he had 21 shot attempts from those two guys, and yet neither one of them figure in the scoring. Not enough, certainly didn't do enough to generate offense that ultimately wound up in the back of the net. So you want the puck on their stick in the offensive zone. Like, that part of it is good, but we saw this against LA the other night too, where I thought Quinn Hughes skated miles, but ultimately, you know, there's just not a bottom line to his effort.
Well, I think that brings up a broader point about depth scoring. It's not just the forwards. We haven't seen a lot of scoring from the blue line. And the first half of the season, it wasn't just Quinn Hughes that was racking up a lot of goals, which has since dried up in the second half. It was Carson Soucy chipping in at times. Tyler Myers on some occasions.
Zadorov's the highest scoring defenseman when it comes to goals since the All-Star break, is hands down. Like, I think he's got five. Hronek and Hughes combined have three. So Big Z's been the guy, and good for him. But, you know, the guys that you're expecting, the guys that log a lot of ice time, that are in the offensive zone with a puck on their stick, yeah, you'd like a little bit more production from them as well.
Hronek as well, because he has that bomb of a shot, right? And he has struggled defensively in the second half at times, not in this game against Dallas specifically, but for a guy who is an offensive defenseman, that's his bread and butter, on his own, it doesn't feel like he has created a lot lately.
It's funny, for a guy, and I'm not disputing what you said there, but it almost feels like the reputation precedes Filip Hronek with this bomb of a shot. Like, he doesn't translate the bomb of a shot into much of anything. Right? Like, he certainly doesn't beat goalies cleanly very often. He's not a power play ace. That second unit has just been desert dry all season long. You know, some guys have that heavy, heavy shot that goalies might save, but they have trouble with, and they spill rebounds and those types. Like, I don't notice an awful lot of that from. So we talk about this guy. Like, tonight, his biggest shot came from like a really sharp angle in the first period when him and Hughes did a switch. And I'm not even sure that, like, that's a, you're not going to score very often from, you know, almost below the hash marks out by the boards. Like, he was a long way from the net, even with a heavy shot. So that's a frustration of mine, just as he's a guy that's in the spotlight now with all the contract talk and, you know, the things that he can do. And we do talk up the big shot, but the big shot doesn't seem to lead to an awful lot for the Canucks.
That's a good point. I think it is interesting. I think even when you look at the NHL edge data, he does have a lot of shots above 90 miles per hour. So it's in his toolkit, but you're right, translating it into goals or the shot that creates the havoc and chaos in front that maybe garners him garners him an assist or something. It doesn't seem to be like he has it in his toolkit as a raw asset, but it isn't converting into actual goals.
Thanks to everybody for contributing. Keep them coming here. 9 to go, and then the real fun begins, and we'll continue to do rink-wide after every game in the playoffs, and we'll up our game, and hopefully you will as well, and we'll see if the Vancouver Canucks do, as they're kind of limping here a little bit towards the end of the homestand at the very least. Let's bring it full circle as they wrap up the homestand on Sunday. 4 wins, 4 losses. Again, I feel like there is some significance, not only in, you know, a third time the charm to get that X. They're going to be in the playoffs. That's not the thing, but I'd kind of like to move past that storyline now. So we'll see if they can take care of Anaheim in that regard. But Anaheim's in Edmonton. I'm going to assume that the Oilers will find a way to win that one. So Edmonton's going to creep a little bit closer in all likelihood. That will put more pressure on the Vancouver Canucks. They've got the goaltending decision. Do you think Arshdeep Bains did enough to stay in the lineup on Sunday afternoon?
Perhaps. I mean, I'll be honest, none of the three options between him, Oman, and DiGiuseppe inspire a lot of confidence in me. I mean, flip a coin at this point. Like,
no, I know. And it wasn't like a, you know, don't tamper with a winning lineup. So the door is certainly open there. I mean, I was a little surprised he played just because he didn't practice online. Yeah. And usually we see Rick Tocchet practices the way that he's going to play. So that was a little bit of a curveball, as were the lines that the Canucks ended up rolling out with Besser and Pettersson paired together. You know, we didn't see that at practice because all the talk yesterday at practice was, oh, Joshua's on this line with Miller and Besser. And then Rick Tocchet kind of went deep into the bag of tricks with the way that he rolled out his line combinations.
Yeah, just because Oman and DiGiuseppe haven't inspired a lot of confidence, and because they've probably gotten more rope, Arshdeep, I think, looked comfortable enough to where you're like, okay, maybe give him a second game, see what you've got. The other thing is, I think you've got to reunite JT and Brock. They've been a really consistent duo this year, and I'm sure that if you give Pettersson and Besser enough rope that they would reestablish the chemistry that they've shown in previous seasons. But I just think the number of chances that Miller is able to set up for Besser. Besser isn't the type of player that's going to create chances on his own. He needs an elite playmaker to set him up. And at this point, Miller is their best playmaker.
All right. 9-game homestand, 8 games in the books. Sunday afternoon, Easter Sunday, a 12:30 start. The early starts haven't always been kind to the Vancouver Canucks, but this one sort of feels like one that I don't care what it looks like. If it takes overtime against the Canucks, just need these points here. to fend off Edmonton, to get a little momentum as they head out on the road for the first time in a whole bunch of weeks. So we'll have another rink-wide after the game coming up on Sunday with the Ducks in town. Harm will continue to read your stuff at The Athletic. We'll be watching you in quads on Canucks Conversation. You guys are working on Good Friday, so you'll have a show to continue to break this thing down. And whatever news comes out, it is a day off for the Vancouver Canucks, so we don't anticipate that there'll be a whole lot of news here. But make sure you check out Canucks Conversation every afternoon, Monday to Friday at 2 o'clock on all of your social platforms. But, as always, good getting you in here. Appreciate your insight. So thanks for hanging in there with us here on Rinkwide for Harm. And for Mike Rogerson, our producer, this is Jeff Patterson. Again, thanks so much for listening. The Vancouver Canucks fall 3-1 to the Dallas Stars. This is Rinkwide Vancouver.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.